are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Monday, January 11th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Chris Savage of Eclectablog. On the rolling disaster that is the poisoning of Flint, Michigan residents. And if there'll be any type of accountability or federal intervention. Also on the program today, U.S. government sued over the Keystone XL pipeline by TransCanada. Just a perfect illustration of what is so problematic about the soon-to-be-voted-on Trans-Pacific Partnership. Meanwhile, will there be federal intervention in the rolling disaster that is Porter Ranch, California? Tons of methane still being leaked into the atmosphere, which could potentially reverse all of the things that we have talked about in terms of fighting climate change over the past couple of weeks, months. Meanwhile, the best law you never heard of, the CARD Act, report comes out and shows how much money consumers have saved. It also gives you an example of just how sort of lecherous the credit card business is. Meanwhile, a landmark report on Snap released. Need to give folks a grace period. El Chapo caught again, ladies and gentlemen, right after his interview with Sean Penn.
What?
Yeah. I just said all of those words. Meanwhile, Carson Super PAC in New Hampshire mutiny. A white supremacist doing robocalls for Trump in Iowa. And Sheldon Adelson playing hard to get. We'll also give you an update on, or I should say a preview. Hopefully we'll have somebody on tomorrow to talk about the Friedrich case, which is the subject of oral arguments today in the Supreme Court. This is a case that involves the agency fees for public sector unions and may have a hugely devastating effect on the last remaining bastion of unionism in this country, that is public sector unions. Meanwhile, quickly, you know, I think it was now, I feel like 4 or 5 years ago, we had the chief, I'm not even sure if I'm saying this, Avery, the chief bee specialist for the state of Pennsylvania on this program when colony collapse was at its peak and there was a tremendous amount of concern about it. And over the years, as we have discuss this phenomena, because bees are incredibly important to our whole food chain. There has been a lot of speculation as to what is killing bees. Well, earlier last week, the EPA announced that a preliminary risk assessment of certain pesticides, which are neonicotinoids, pose a threat to some pollinators, specifically honeybees. The pesticide, the specific pesticide is imidacloprid. I wonder if this story is just written specifically to see how many words I can mispronounce. But it's one of four neonicotinoid pesticides that honey producers and environmentalists have fingered as potentially being responsible for the rapidly declining bee populations that we've seen in North America and in other places. This is the colony collapse disorder. It's not terribly surprising. The stuff gets sprayed onto plants, to fruits. Pollinators come in. They ingest this stuff. It's not surprising that it wouldn't mess with their ability either to find their colonies or to function properly. The EU banned the use of neonicotinoids in 2013. Because, of course, they're anti-science. Right? Isn't that what we've been told? In 2015, the EPA basically put a moratorium on the approval of new uses for these neonicotinoids until this assessment was released. There'll be a 60-day comment period, and the EPA will finalize its risk assessment and take regulatory action if necessary. So moving slowly in the right direction in some areas anyways. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Chris Savage about this just a horrible, devastating story of Flint, Michigan. The best case scenario is that Governor Snyder's implementation of these emergency managers, basically saying we're going to undemocratize this local government, is going to cause the destruction in many ways of thousands of kids' lives. That's the best case scenario. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Chris Savage. We are back, Sam Cedar, on the Majority Report. Of course, that was David Bowie, who passed away, I guess it was yesterday, of cancer at age 69, a real loss. We may mention it later in the member half of the program. But in the meantime, it's a pleasure to welcome to the program Chris Savage. He is the proprietor and writer at Eclectablog, which is a blog that follows the ongoing sort of rolling disaster that Michigan has become over the years. With all due respect, Chris, it is, you have been chronicling this and have been writing, I mean, for an extended period of time about the problems inherent in Governor Snyder's implementation of this sort of these emergency measures in appointing emergency city managers, unelected city managers as opposed to mayors. And this situation in Flint is just one more example and perhaps one of the most tragic examples of the implications of those moves.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this of all of the things that have come out of emergency management in Michigan, this is truly the most epically and profoundly devastating thing that has happened. And it really does fall squarely on these emergency managers and by default, our governor, Rick Snyder, who has promoted them since he came into office in 2010. You know, you can trace all of the things that have happened in Flint back to a decision by Darnell Early, who was the emergency manager at the time. To switch over to Flint River, despite the fact that the Detroit Water and Sewerage Department had allowed Flint to stay on their system until their new system was constructed. He refused to do that because it would cost him a bit more money, and now we're where we are now. And it's important to know that in 2011, the city of Flint commissioned a report to look into using the Flint River, and they sent that report to the state government in 2013, outlining the steps that would need to be taken if they used the Flint River due to the corrosivity of the river. Water, the pH of the water and other water chemistry. And none of those steps were taken. And it's also important to know that in February of last year, the federal government alerted Michigan's Department of Environmental Quality that oversees our drinking water program about the appearance of lead and copper and other contaminants in river water or in tap water due to the switch to the Flint River in 2014, and they took action literally 10 months later in October, months later in October. So,
all right, let's
took them that long.
Let's go back to start the timeline here, and we should
sure.
tell people. I mean, I think most people know just how horrific lead is to the neurological development of young kids and infants. I mean, this is obviously
Absolutely.
Why. We got rid of lead paint over 40 some odd years ago. It's why we got rid of leaded gasoline. It is arguable as to whether or not, and I'm one of those people who do subscribe to this theory, that the massive decline we have seen in crime starting in the early 90s was a function of the diminishment of lead in our environment in terms of aerialized lead. That study, we've had people on to talk about that in the past, but that is, I will concede that that is arguable, but there is no argument as to what the implications of ingesting lead are for kids this age. So take us back to that first decision. You say Flint, Michigan had to get off of the Detroit was contemplating getting off the Detroit water a supply, and that was obviously because the appointed city manager wanted to save money.
Yes, and you know, I would say that you know the city of Flint itself was looking into that. They are at the end of the line of the Detroit Water and Sewage Department, so their costs are very expensive, and so they had already started looking into this to making this move. And what they decided to do was to actually build their own pipeline from Lake Huron due west over to Genesee County and to Flint. And they were going to get their own water from the same source as Detroit, but it would be less expensive for them. So that pipeline is actually being built now along with a new water treatment plant. But when they announced that they were going to do that, the Detroit Water and Sewage Department, and keep in mind, at this time, Detroit was under an emergency manager itself, as was Flint. They said, nope, you're going to be cut off, you know, at X date because, you know, that's just the way it's going to be. So Flint made arrangements to move to or started looking into using the Flint River. Rather than these two emergency managers sitting down, these two, you know, appointees by Rick Snyder and figuring this out. Then at some point later, Detroit did come back and say, okay, look, you can stay on our system until your system is built. And Darnell Early said, no, thank you, but no, thank you. We've got this under control. It's going to be a lot less expensive for us. And then so that decision was made. And then in April 2014, they did indeed switch over to the Flint River. And when they started doing that, they had other problems to begin with. They had E. coli in the water because they didn't have adequate water treatment. And then they started overchlorinating, which generated trihalomethanes, which are a toxic substance. It's a byproduct of disinfecting the water. And the color itself, I mean, you've probably seen these images of people drawing tap water that looks brown and stuff. That was a direct result of that switch. They got that stuff under control, and then they realized, you know, then the lead problem became manifest. And it took a while for that to manifest because the inside, what's happened is that it's not that the Flint River water has lead in it. It's that the chemistry of that river, when it hit the lines running from the street to these people's homes, a lot of these are old homes, and a lot of them have lead lines or lead pipelines. And the chemistry of the water started eroding away the mineral scale and the biofilm that coated those and protected the water from being, you know, in contact with the lead. And then once that happened, the lead was exposed, and then it started going into the water.
And
that's where we're at today.
My understanding is an incredibly inexpensive and simple treatment could have been performed to this water, putting in, I'm not exactly sure what it is.
It's phosphates, yes. Phosphate. And that's exactly the, yeah. Phosphate treatments are very effective at this. They provide this a chemical coating that sort of isolates the surface, the metal surface, the lead surface, and the soldering. The lead's largely in the soldering, and prevents that from being leached into the water. And again, that treatment system was spelled out in this report that was sent to the state officials in 2013, and it was ignored. And a more egregious thing is that, you know, when they started realizing that they had a problem, they started doing testing. And for a city as large as Flint, they were supposed to be taking 100 water samples from people's taps in worst case scenarios and then making a judgment. And if they were at the 90th percentile, they were supposed to take action. And they only took 71, something like that, samples. A few of them spiked very, very high. And so the DEQ instructed them to remove several of the samples that were skewing the results in a direction that they didn't want, and dropped it down to 60, which was actually illegal because they were mandated to do 100. And that was the report that they used to determine whether or not they needed to take action. So they altered that DEQ report under the direction of the DEQ, and that prevented them basically from, you know, alleviated them from the burden of having to do any kind of response. And it wasn't until things got really hairy in October that they finally, you know, 8 months later, to finally took a decisive action, as they call it.
This is so effed up. It's almost impossible to imagine, because people have to remember throughout this entire process, there's not a single person who isn't aware in this process of what lead does to children. Not a single,
right. it's got single person.
It's got
legacy effects. I mean, these kids have it in their bones, and these kids could literally pass it on to their own children later. It's a multi-generational problem.
And it is, I mean, there is a tremendous amount of clinical work out there that just shows, like, you know, like you could say with near 100% certainty that it's going to affect these kids' ability down the road in terms of their chances to get jobs, in terms of their chances to move out of poverty, in terms of their chances to live normal lives. I mean, it is and lives with some a greater potential. I mean, it's stunning. It is so stunning.
These are kids that are starting out, you know, deep in a hole already when it comes to, you know, their economic circumstances and, you know, the schooling that they have and that type of thing. So it literally is kids hanging on the edge of a hole and somebody coming along and kicking their fingers off.
So
it's really that bad.
So, I mean, in terms of first off, let's just talk first before we talk about accountability. What's being done now? My understanding is that it's a combination of like some churches handing out water filters and some, you know, now the state government is getting involved in that. What's going on now?
You would expect that there would be trucks running from Lansing to Flint with as much water as they could carry to help these people out. And the fact is that the state is not providing enough water, and they're not starting distribution until tomorrow with the state police. So you're right. It's been charitable organizations. There's a group in Ann Arbor, for example, that's collecting water. There are people, you know, unions are getting involved, and they're literally caravanning up to Flint to bring water to the people of Flint. The state is providing water filters now, but a sheriff in the area actually did a door-to-door survey recently and found that 2/3 of the homes don't have water filters. So, you know, these people literally have nothing but poison water coming out of their taps at this point, and the only recourse they have is to go get bottled water from, you know, these charitable organizations. So it's been a scandal from start to finish, and it's not over yet.
And I would imagine in that it's quite possible there's a significant percentage of the population in Flint that's not even fully aware of it.
It's very possible. You know, these are people that are on the lower end of the income scale. They don't often have the internet and that type of thing. And this is an issue that they literally need to go door to door and inform people. And they don't know, you know, the problem is we don't really know who's got the problem and who doesn't, because it really comes down to whether or not you've got lead solder in that line running from the street where the water comes in to your home. That's where all the problems occur. But, you know, replacing all those, the new Flint mayor is actually anticipating about $1.5 billion to replace all those lines. And this is a problem actually that is manifest in a lot of aging urban areas. But now, this one was made manifest because of this water change to the Flint River.
Is this mayor an elected mayor? Because I know that
she is. She is. She was. She came in. She ousted the previous mayor, Dane Walling, basically because she ran on a platform that he wasn't doing enough. Frankly, Dane Walling, in my opinion, was a fine mayor and did everything he could. But you know, he was under an emergency manager. He literally had no power, and all of these decisions were taken out of his hands. But he has paid the political price for this, unfortunately. And it really is unfortunate because Dane Walling had some really great stuff going on, but she has taken the bull by the horns. She's being very aggressive, and she's met with the governor. And so I give her a lot of credit for what she has done. But, you know, there are people paying political prices for this, Sam, but they're not the people who are responsible for the problem.
Is the city manager still in effect in Flint?
I believe they are now on the next stage after an emergency manager. So the mayor has some powers, but there's still a governing body that's sort of making all the decisions, and all these decisions have to go through this oversight committee. It's a phase out. They don't just turn off the switch when it comes to emergency managers. They're several years under an advisory panel that has to approve all the decisions that are made.
Now, and give me your sense. I imagine you've thought about this quite a bit. Where do you see the choke points? I mean, the first obvious one to me in terms of accountability, at least, you know, starting at Flint and moving out, seems to be that when you put in someone who has no electoral accountability to the population in a city, then they don't have to respond to anything. That they don't care what they're constituents are saying, because that's not their constituents. Their constituents are back at the Capitol sitting in the governor's office, right?
That's exactly right.
And so they don't care what those guys are saying any more than they would care what I'm saying in Brooklyn, for that matter.
That's true. Although I will say Darnell Early, who was the second to last emergency manager and who was the one who made that fateful decision to stay on the Flint River or to move to the Flint River, he published an op-ed in the Detroit News basically exonerating himself of everything and saying that this was actually the city council's responsibility. But in terms of who's going to be held responsible for this thing, I don't think anybody's going to be, Sam. In our state, our Court of Appeals and our Supreme Court are all controlled by the Republicans. And, you know, they defend themselves, and they're all, you know, largely, you know, many of these people are appointed by Governor Snyder. The people who are going to go to jail, you watch it, it's going to be the protesters right now. I guarantee you the people that end up going to jail for this are going to be people protesting what's going on in Flint if history repeats itself, which it's very likely to.
Is there any talk of any type of federal intervention? I mean, I don't know if this follows under some type of like civil rights infringements, but it seems to me that you have a right to get water, and that there was so much negligence involved here.
You bet. So there are two different things going on. The EPA is looking into this because there were violations of the Clean Water Act in the lead and copper rule. So that will happen. The guy that was in charge of DEQ when this all went down and who made some of the really crappy decisions has resigned. The guy that ran the water system in Flint has resigned. I don't think they'll pay the price, but they no longer have their jobs. There's also now we've learned last week that the U.S. Attorney's Office is conducting an investigation. They're part of the Department of Justice. So there is some potential for a federal case to be made, in which case perhaps somebody will end up paying or, you know, being held accountable. But honestly, I'm very pessimistic about it, to be honest with you.
Is there, give me a sense of how the state, I mean, the population in general in the state is reacting. I mean, I ask this with a fair amount of trepidation, because I get the sense that, you know, I mean, I think you and I have talked in the past about the way the state perceives Detroit. And I have a feeling in terms of Flint, where you have so many people who have been left behind in many respects and basically warehoused, that the state at large, I don't know, you tell me.
Well, you know, in some ways you're right. Flint is sort of a mini Detroit in that regard. I will say that this has risen to a level that's a little bit more on people's outrage meters. You know, I will give a lot of credit, and I don't always do this, Sam, but I will give a lot of credit to the Michigan media who have been really dogging on this. The ACLU also hired a guy named Kurt Guyette, who's just done some phenomenal investigative journalism on this stuff. And now that folks like yourself and Rachel Maddow and Salon and Forbes and The Atlantic and all these groups are starting to talk about this in the New York Times, now that there's some national scrutiny on this thing, I think it's really starting to rise to the level where people are just, you know, they're seeing it for what it is. It was an attempt to save money. It's an attempt to fix urban problems by just cutting and cutting and cutting instead of rebuilding and renewal. And they're starting to see this for the failure that it is, this emergency management system. So I do think that this one's getting a little more attention. Whether or not it translates into something that will cause people to pay a political price for it, that remains to be seen.
Well, I know that you have outlined the failure of this system in multiple cities across the country. I mean, excuse me, the state, and in multiple instances in terms of things that were supposedly brought in, these emergency managers were brought in to fix, whether it was school systems, whether it was budgets. This is just the one, I guess, that leads to just a massive amount. I mean, literally, you had a city that was poisoning its residents. I mean, it's just beyond comprehension. The bottom line was, it's saving money, and we're just not going to pay attention. Because there was also some red flags early on, right? There was an out of state. I can't remember what.
So there was a professor named I think it's Mark Edwards from University of Virginia who. Really was one of the bird dogs on this. Him and a woman who was a nurse at a local medical facility. The two of them were doing testing. They were doing blood testing. They were doing water samples. And they really were the ones who brought this to the attention of everybody. And, you know, and God bless them for doing it, because without it, the Flint residents really had very little voice. You know, and when you don't have representative government, you know, you only have one office door to knock on, and that's the emergency manager, and that person does not have to pay attention to you. You know, that these people have really, you know, it's I won't call it citizen journalism, but it's sort of the equivalent of that, of people taking it upon themselves to do these tests and to make sure that that they were, you know, that the results were made public. And the ACLU, again, has been just dynamite on this stuff in having a paid investigative journalist really doing the FOIAs and all of the investigative work that needs to be done.
And lastly, I have to ask, is there any civil suits that are, I mean, I would imagine at this point there's a significant class of people. I don't know if they're allowed to sue the local or the state government in this instance. But
there is a lawsuit pending. I'm not sure the status on that right now, and I don't know the details of it. So without being an attorney, I wouldn't really speak to it. But I know that they're in. I think a lot of people are just sort of, you know, they're finally getting off their feet and shaking their head and saying, "Wow," you know, and they're just sort of processing this. So I don't think that the lawsuits are over yet. I think we've got more to see on that stuff.
Chris Savage, we will link to a collective blog where folks can read more about this and the rolling disaster that is this emergency manager plan that has been imposed by Snyder now for.
Hillary Clinton issued a press release this morning about it, so it's really starting to make national news big time.
Well, I'm glad it is. It's horrific. It really is horrific. Thanks so much for all the work you've been doing on this, Chris. It's
a real
service. All right, folks.
Take it.
Bye bye. All right, folks. I mean, just it's devastating. It really is devastating. I mean, the. This is just the beginning of this nightmare for literally thousands of children. Thousands of children. And there's no detoxifying from this. I mean, and like Chris said, I mean, this is something at this level of lead poisoning. It's something that you could theoretically pass on to your children. Just horrific. And while we're on these sort of rolling environmental disasters that, you know, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, all of this is just a function of money, right? And it's not just incompetence although there's a huge amount of incompetence involved in this. I mean, the treatment for this water that could have prevented this is in literally in the hundreds of dollars, probably. But the impetus for these decisions and the active refusal to listen to constituents. The only way this happens is if there is no political accountability. You cannot have a disaster of this size if there is any modicum of political accountability. Now, of course, if this water was being piped into wealthy white suburban neighborhoods, it would have ended very quickly. It probably would have never happened in the first place. And even if there was a more democratic system, you know that people coming from the poorest communities get the least responsive governments. But even with that baseline, this is just extraordinary. And this is what the system is set up for, right? I mean, this is why you appoint an emergency manager. It is because you want someone in there who's not going to listen to the complaints of the community or the erstwhile constituents, I guess, the would-be constituents. That is the number one reason why you do this. So that they can do things that screw over people in the community without any restraint. And in this instance, it just happened to be something that has devastating health consequences. It's not just services. It's not just quality of life. It's not just an opportunity to live where they've been living. It's not just a subpar education, which is really not going to manifest itself in such a way that you as a city manager are going to be held responsible for. I mean, this is, you know, we don't see the implications of this for years to come, so you can get away with that. This is the same thing. It just so happens that this one is going to have devastating health consequences. This is why when they destroy the concept of democratically elected officials, why it can be so devastating. It really is unbelievable. And the amount of negligence, the amount of incompetence. At one point, apparently, the governor's chief of staff was like, I'm getting concerned about this. This is like a lobbyist. It's like the worst of the worst. He's saying, starting to look a little bad here. We may have a problem here. Honestly, the governor, the idea that there isn't people, I don't know what it would take to put a government official in handcuffs, if not this. Well, the guy used his office to enhance his legal career. You know, he made $300,000. Okay, good. I'm glad you're locking that person away. How about the guy who destroyed the lives of thousands of children by poisoning the people there so that they could save a little money and he could run on the notion of like, look at what we've done for the... Just unbelievable. Meanwhile, in California, in Porter Ranch, which is a community about 25 miles north of Los Angeles, for 3 months now, there has been a massive methane leak from an underground tank of methane that is piped to Porter Ranch from Texas, from the Midwest, from the Rocky Mountains. Methane has been leaking into the air at a rate of almost 1,300 metric tons a day. It has forced the evacuation of about 2,000 homes, the closing of two schools, and widespread reports of residents being sickened. Nosebleeds. I mean, who knows what else? This leak became the single biggest source of methane emission in all of California almost overnight. Apparently, it started on October 23rd. Within days, it was already the biggest single source of methane emissions in all of California. According to the Washington Post, when you project this leak out over 20 years, it's equal to the emissions of 6 coal-fired power plants or 7 million cars. It's massive. They don't think they're going to be able to get this under control for at least 2 or 3 months. There has been over 73,000 metric tons of methane gas pumped into the atmosphere. You know that methane gas has up to 80 times the global warming potential of CO2. This is the bridge fuel, folks, that's going to take us from oil to batteries. Everything's going to be fine once we get to solar and wind. In the meantime, we may have, you know, speeding up the rate of global warming significantly because we now have found something even worse for the creation of greenhouse gases than CO2. So now what they're doing apparently is they're digging these big wells and pouring cement down there in the hopes of, I guess, like maybe we'll bump up against the leak somewhere. But think about the implications of this. This isn't like we move out of our house and then in 3 or 4 months after we've destroyed the, we've seriously poisoned the atmosphere, we move back in. A lot of people were hoping to sell their homes. How many people are interested now in buying a home in Porter Ranch, California? I guess for those who are looking for a house at 80% of the value it represented 2 months ago. And I guess, you know, some conservatives. I guess our buddy Doug, who calls in the fun half of the show, might be looking for something. It's a great value. And I imagine this would be a libertarian paradise, right? As long as we price it in. Unbelievable. It's obviously really dangerous to inhale methane at this point. I don't know if there is an example of like what happens when you put this much methane into the air. And I don't know if at this point you can smell it. I don't know if they've injected that smell of sulfur in there.
I could be wrong about this, but I think they had. I saw that they had.
So at least people have a sense of why they're getting sickened. But again, this is another story. There are attorneys, and I may try and get, I feel like Bobby Kennedy may be involved in this. I'm not 100% sure, but I think I've read that. There is, I guess we should wait until the evidence is in, but I'm willing to bet there were safety precautions that could have been taken by Southern California Gas that would just deem slightly too expensive. So I guess we'll find out about that. But there you have it, folks. So we saved some money. We saved some money.
Keep your mittens to yourself.
This one is another example.
That's a Walter Block moment right there.
Right. This is another example, at least at Porter Ranch, of a company saying, we're going to cut corners or we're not going to spend enough to really, really insure. I mean, we could cut our risks down to 1 in 1,000,000. We're willing to live with 1 in 15,000, 1 in 20,000, 1 in 10,000, 1 in 1,500. And when they do that, what they're doing is they're offloading that risk to the people who live in that community. Every single one of those people who had to leave their homes, every single one of those people who have homes within that general vicinity, they have now absorbed that risk in the form of their kids can't go to school anymore. Their homes are worthless now. They can't live in their homes. I imagine if you were to track the trajectory of these people's lives 5, 10, 15, 20 years out, you'd see more divorce. You'd see more depression. You'd see more, you'd see a decrease in earnings, on and on and on. And of course, that was just the risk that SoCal decided on their own. We're going to offload this risk to these people. They don't realize they're taking that risk, but that's what we're going to do. And this is what we see time and time again. All right, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program, and man, do I feel like we need it. We'll listen to Chris Christie, who...
That's sort of fun.
Yeah. Well, actually, it will be fun.
It's a little off-putting in its own way.
LaPage should be forgiven for his comments because he sincerely apologized. He felt really bad about it.
LaPage, I don't know what's going on with that guy.
And where Ted Cruz compares Hillary Clinton to a 5-year-old who deserves a spanking. And we actually have something really funny, which is a parody on the Oregon, Michigan militiamen. Oh, and also, we should play. Let's take ourselves out with this. Folks, if you have kids listening to the program now, hide their ears because we have a musical release from Jamie Kilstein's album that's going to be released soon. You can pre-order the album. We've got it on the blog, right? That Pledge Music link, Michael, that I sent you?
Jamie Kilstein's song is on the blog.
No, the link to where they can pre-order the album. It's in that email I sent you.
Oh, yeah, got it.
Really weird, like how legalistic Michael is on that, right? Like he reiterates, like you say, did you pick up the milk? Yes, I picked up the things that you mentioned. No, did you pick up the milk? Well, I went down and picked up something. Was it the milk?
That's correct.
Yes.
That's correct.
Milk.
I would say that what you had sort of indicated before was sort of generally scoped out in a way in which you had indicated.
So Jamie's coming out with an album, and there is a track with me on there. And what did I say? I can't remember. He came in with the producer, and I said a couple of words. I can't remember what it was. I think it was for the music video, maybe. I don't remember. Yeah, I think it was from the music video.
I'm not sure. But nevertheless, check it out. Here is the song, and I hope the kids have closed their ears. I certainly agree with the sentiment. But why the dirty words? Why the dirty words? Like Bill Cosby. Why the dirty words?
Why the profanity?
Mm.
Ooh.
It's been a while since
that's terrible.
Cosby.
Terrible impression. My God. I just Cosbyed myself.
It is entitled F the NRA. Here it is. Folks, don't forget you can become a member of the Majority Report at jointhemajorityreport.com. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. We will have the new links tomorrow, but in the meantime, if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. All right, here it is. Jamie Kilstein's F the NRA.
Gun to show people how tough you are, then you are a fucking coward. Yeah, well, I only use my gun to hunt animals. Oh, then you are a fucking coward who's so afraid of the terrifying land monster, the deer, you have to dress up in camo, bring your friends for backup, and climb a tree to shoot an animal whose only job is to frolic. Wow. Are you a Navy SEAL? Did you kill Bin Laden? You sound so brave. Why is it never dangerous animals I hear about you hunting? It's every woodland creature from a Disney movie who before you showed up were probably singing a song about helping a rabbit marry a cow or some weird Disney shit. Yeah, well, the Constitution says I can have a gun. Fine, then grab a musket and keep protecting us from the cast of Downton Abbey, old man. Constitution didn't say shit about you using Glocks to mow down black teenagers because you're afraid of anything not wearing a Klan outfit. Oh, but you think the government's going to attack us? Stop acting like Steven Seagal from the movies, because in real life, you are Steven Seagal in real life. Have you seen that guy run? It's horrible. What do you think is going to happen if the government attacks America? Well, the military may have invaded America, but they didn't count on one thing. Tom. He may look like an out-of-shape meth head who spends all day calling women whores on YouTube comment threads, but he has one gun and a whole bag of snacks. Take a breath, Red Dawn, and stop watching Alex Jones videos. How many schools need to get shot to shit before you decide buying a punching bag instead of a killing machine is worth more than a child's life? Yeah, well, I could kill a kid with a stick, too. What are you gonna do? You gonna ban sticks? Nope. But now I don't trust you with a stick either, you fucking weirdo. If the solution to all your problems is add more guns, then something's wrong with you, Yosemite fuckface. You don't stop shootings by adding more guns. You don't stop Macklemore by adding Iggy Azalea. Yeah, well, you want to stop school shootings? Why don't you arm the teachers? We don't pay teachers enough to afford bullets. Motherfucker, I don't trust cops with guns, and they're trained how to use them. Mike Brown's murderer was trained how to use them. Tamir Rice's murderer was trained how to use them. Sean Bell's murderers were trained how to use them. 50 times were trained how to use them. You tell us if we don't like guns to get out of America? We're not the ones killing people, asshole. You get out and fuck off to your Mad Max paradise and bring your George Zimmermans, bring your Charlton Hestons, and fuck off there forever. Stand your ground there forever. Love it or leave it there forever. Fuck the NRA forever.